Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for April 20th, 2012.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
The dream you have directly before you wake up is the one that determines your initial mood for the day. And so if you can have more pleasant dreams, then you'll be in a better mood.
Kids raised in the same group had more similar vocalizations than kids raised in different groups.
We're actually mimicking what we already are very good at anyway, and that's basic everyday visual object identification.
Both male and female listeners voted more often for the lower pitched version, whether it was a male candidate or a female candidate.
This week, why having a deeper voice could garner a politician more votes, and what music and speech have in common when it comes to conveying emotion. Also, baboons can recognize words and baby goats have accents. But first, Suzanne Bard reports on a new app that could change how you dream.
These days, there are smartphone apps that do everything from finding your lost keys to debiting your bank account when you miss a day at the gym. But can your smartphone influence your dreams? University of Hertfordshire psychologist Richard Wiseman and his team have launched a new app for the iPhone to test this hypothesis. He says dreaming renders us mostly immobile, so the app, called Dream On, uses the iPhone's motion sensor to detect when you're dreaming. Near the end of the night, it quietly starts playing an audio soundscape when it senses you're in dreamland.
It wakes you up directly after a dream and prompts you to type in a report of your dream, and that comes into our database.
The research team will analyze the data to see if hearing birds chirp makes you dream about nature, for example. And Wiseman says if the experiment successfully influences dreams, the app might someday be used as a therapeutic tool for people with mood disorders.
The dream you have directly before you wake up is the one that determines your initial mood for the day. And so if you can have more pleasant dreams, then you'll be in a better mood. And good mood can kick off all sorts of beneficial effects. There's a lot of research showing that depressed people tend to dream far more, and those dreams tend to be more negative than most. So trying to shape that may actually help them. That's, you know, a long way off. It's a bit blue skies-y, but again, it's not impossible. So it may have real implications for people.
The app can be downloaded for free at www.dreamonapp.com. The developers plan to make it available on other types of smartphones in the near future.
Fascinating, Suzanne. Music can convey both happy and sad emotions. Neurobiologist Daniel Bowling and his colleagues at Duke University think music may share tonal properties with speech that express emotion in similar ways. He and his team analyzed both Western and South Indian speech and music. He says when people are sad, their tone of voice doesn't change much, as in this sample of speech in the South Indian language of Tamil. However, when people are happy, their tone of voice changes much more, like this. Bowling and his team found the same held true in both Western and South Indian music as well.
When you have sad music, you have small jumps between tones. When you have happy music, you have large jumps between tones. And the same is true of speech.
He adds that this may be a universal phenomenon, allowing people to tell the difference between sad and happy music wherever it's from. As the 2012 presidential race heats up, state and local races are also getting off the ground. A candidate's success depends on many factors. A new study suggests that how deep his or her voice is could be one of them. Suzanne has that story.
All other things being equal, people may be more likely to vote for political candidates with lower-pitched voices than higher-pitched voices. This according to Duke behavioral ecologist Rindy Anderson. She and her colleagues recorded both women and men saying,
"I urge you to vote for me this November."
The researchers digitally manipulated the recordings, making them sound slightly higher and slightly lower in pitch than normal.
"I urge you to vote for me this November."
Then they had volunteers listen to the voices and decide which version of the simulated politician they would rather vote for.
Both male and female listeners voted more often for the lower pitched version, whether it was a male candidate or a female candidate.
Anderson says this jibes with other studies, suggesting that whether or not it's deserved, deeper voices command more respect.
And we also, with a separate group of people, played them these same voices and then asked them which voice is stronger, which voice is more competent, and which voice is more trustworthy. And we find that the lower pitched versions were judged as being competent, stronger, and more trustworthy. So this starts to get at what it might be about low pitch that is influencing our perceptions.
They plan to test the findings in real elections later this year.
Thanks, Suzanne. In related news, researchers at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands report in the journal Psychological Science that an important part of social interaction is imitation. We subconsciously speak and move like the person we're talking with. But in new research, they found that when another person mimics you either too little or too much, you feel a chill. They suggest that these chills are nature's way of warning us that the person we're with may be insincere. Next, Science Update correspondent Justin Warner reports that while baboons can't actually read, they can learn to recognize words.
That's been determined by a team of French researchers, including cognitive psychologist Jonathan Granger of Aix-Marseille University. His team taught baboons to distinguish dozens of real English words from thousands of nonsense letter combinations. The animals learned from a computer game that was available round the clock in their living quarters.
You have to imagine what it's like to start with. Imagine yourself in front of an unknown alphabet and given these strings of symbols that you have to just say that one is a word and one is a, you have no clue to start with. And obviously the baboons had no clue to start with either. So at the beginning, they're just randomly choosing one response for just about everything that comes on the screen. To help them understand that there is a difference there, for every new word that is presented, this word is repeated. And so you get the same word coming back intermixed with non-words. So the baboon learns to respond a word to these things that keep on being repeated.
Once they could identify a word with 80% accuracy, they recognized it even when it was dropped from the game for a long time and then brought back. With extensive practice, they could even recognize words they'd never seen before as legitimate words, at least more often than not. That challenges the notion that human reading, even at its most basic level, still involves associating printed symbols with sounds and meanings.
And here we're arguing that that is likely to be only part of the story. So we're not saying it's wrong, we're just saying that it's only part of the story. And the other part of the story, and this is where the work with baboons comes in, that maybe we use letters as well to identify words because we're actually mimicking what we already are very good at anyway, and that's basic everyday visual object identification. And the reason being that we would actually identify everyday objects such as tables and chairs by using information about the parts of these objects. So for a table, the tabletop, the four legs of the table in a particular spatial configuration, and use that information to identify the table. And we'll be doing the same thing with words, using letters and the relations between the letters to identify the word.
The findings suggest that humans' aptitude for reading goes all the way back to our primate ancestors, which may help explain why written language developed independently in several different early human societies.
Thanks, Justin. Baby goats look and sound adorable, but their plaintive calls could be communicating an important message. This according to animal behaviorist Elodie Briefer at Queen Mary University of London. She raised goat kids in several groups and analyzed their calls at 1 week of age and again at 5 weeks. She found that genetics influenced their calls. Kids raised in separate groups sounded more similar to their full siblings than to their half-siblings.
But also I found that kids raised in the same group had more similar vocalizations than kids raised in different groups, independently of the fact that they were related or not.
What's more, members of a group sounded more alike over time. She says this is the first time accents have been detected in farm animals, but that having recognizable calls may help the animals find their herd mates after being separated. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, we'll tell you about a harpoon that could sample the stuff of comets and how researchers are counting penguins from space. Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.